Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. We have a busy Friday docket, so let's get to it. First, an update on the missing six-year-old South Carolina, Faye Marie Swetlick. Second, Michael Avenatti's jury makes a decision, and they just did it. Third, a bone-chilling 911 call from an ambush in Ohio. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day with a Valentine's Day theme. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich of Crime Talk, and thank you for tuning in. Yes, if you have not subscribed yet, we would ask you to please do so. And just remember, Crime Talk is the most unbiased, fact-driven, true crime channel on YouTube, and we are going to keep it that way. So please subscribe, hit that like button, and hit that little bell if you'd like to receive notifications as well. Let's get to the docket. First, an update on the six-year-old that was found deceased yesterday in South Carolina, Faye Marie Swetlick. Now, she disappeared last seen from her front yard. We reported yesterday that the investigation continued and obviously that they found the deceased body of Faye Marie Swetlick. Now, literally, as soon as they found that, they also found the deceased body of a 30-year-old male. What wasn't known was really who was this 30-year-old male and why was he apparently there or in the vicinity of Faye. Well, as it turns out, this individual, this deceased male, was a neighbor. Can you believe that? A neighbor of Faye Marie Swetlick, who the police had not only interviewed, but had actually even been into the house and had not noticed anything suspicious, at least not anything that would warrant probable cause or to make him a person of interest, at least as far as we know at this point. But what we do know is that the police from Casey, South Carolina, which is a suburb of Columbia, declined to explain how the man, Cody Scott Taylor, is connected with the death of Faye, who went missing Monday, but they said no suspects are being sought in either person's death, and they presume that the public is safe. What obviously that would imply was that this person is responsible for the death of Faye, and obviously he must have taken his own life. What the police are saying is that they are linked, Scott and Faye. Now, Faye, as we talked about, was last seen Monday playing outside her family home in Churchill Heights, a neighborhood of Casey, South Carolina. Police honed in on a garbage truck Thursday and found evidence in the trash before it was hauled away, which quickly led them to the girl's body, according to the police. Her death is being investigated as a homicide. As part of that search, the police located a critical item of evidence related to their investigation. And based upon that discovery, they narrowed down an area that they felt the investigated team had already searched but needed to go back to and search again. It was the city's director of public safety, Byron Snellgrove, who actually made the discovery of the body. And then they believed that Faye had not been in that location for a very long time at all. And literally moments later, locating Faye, they located this deceased male. The male, Cody Scott Taylor, who has no known criminal history, and the police had even been inside the man's home in the course of their investigation. The police did confirm that Taylor was simply a neighbor and was not a relative, and he was not a friend. He was just simply a neighbor. This is a tragedy all around, not only for the community, because anytime a child is hurt or murdered like Faye was in this particular case, it takes away just a little bit of the fabric of that community. And it also lets you know that you have to be so careful out there. For example, this person was a neighbor, no known criminal history. What does somebody that looks like they could do something evil look like? You don't know. That's why you have to be so vigilant and be cautious. Tragedy all around. Our condolences go out to the Swetlick family in this particular case. Next on the docket, Michael Avenatti, acclaimed celebrity attorney, although up till about 2 years ago, no one had ever heard of him. But it was his suit with Stormy Daniels against President Trump that really brought him to the forefront. Well, that is what brought Michael Avenatti, well, to where he is today. Now, unfortunately for him, he is a convicted felon in custody facing 20 years in prison for extortion. So let's do a little background from Mr. Avenatti's case to show you what brought him here and where he is going. So Mr. Avenatti's extortion case in New York really developed out of a case where he represented an individual by the name of Gary Franklin. He was a small-time competitive basketball coach for youth teams. He apparently was bringing a claim against Nike that basically there were some improprieties as it relates to various payments and things of that nature. And Mr. Franklin stated that he hired Avenatti because he thought he would have the gravitas to bring Nike to a settlement. And Mr. Avenatti was able to get a settlement that Mr. Franklin was okay with. But what Mr. Avenatti did that was not okay was he went above and beyond what Mr. Franklin was asking him to do. And what Mr. Avenatti was doing was not just getting a settlement where he was going to take a piece of it on a contingency fee basis. He was basically negotiating a separate fee in and of what his client wanted for himself. And in this particular case, Mr. Avenatti got on the phone with the lawyers from Nike and said, okay, that's great that you're going to pay Mr. Franklin what he's asking for, but what about me? And what he did in that process was say, I want to be paid $25 million because I'm going to conduct an internal audit to make sure this doesn't happen again for Nike, basically creating more work for him and him getting a payday. Problem is, his client didn't authorize it, and his client was not aware of that in any way whatsoever. Additionally, Michael Avenatti wasn't just being a hard-charging lawyer in this particular case, an advocate for his client. He was going above and beyond, saying that he wasn't looking for just a few million dollars, that he was going to go public and basically knock off billions of dollars in market capitalization to Nike if he didn't get his way. Well, that's extortion. That's not just saying, if I'm going to file this lawsuit, you guys are going to get sued and whatever happens, happens. He knew what he was doing. He was trying to basically say, if you don't do this, I'm going to take off this market cap, which could be billions and billions of dollars for Nike in lost value. So the Nike attorneys promptly called the United States Attorney's Office, and what did they have? The best evidence they could. They recorded the phone calls. And I've said this all along over the course of years of my practice, it's always the defendant's own words that come back and bite them. Hence the reason why any attorney will always tell your client to say as little as possible or nothing at all. The fact that this is recorded and the jury could hear it and they could play it in closing statements, hearing somebody basically crossing the line didn't look good for Mr. Michael Avenatti from the beginning. So the jury, well, they just did it to Michael Avenatti. He will remain in custody. His sentencing is now set for June. And at that point, the courts will conduct a pre-sentence investigation. And the federal system, it's a very thorough pre-sentence investigation report. And they will calculate the offense level and his criminal history. Now, I don't believe Mr. Avenatti has much of a criminal history, and he's not going to be getting close to the 20 years, which is the maximum penalty under the statute. But he is going to federal prison, all right? When you get into the federal system, you've hit the big time, and rarely, rarely do you ever get to the point where you're going to receive probation. So this is not the end of Mr. Avenatti's legal troubles. He still has another case in U.S. District Court for the Southern District of New York where he is accused of defrauding his former client, the exotic dancer, out of money for a book deal. Then on the West Coast, where it all kind of really started for Mr. Avenatti, where he was arrested defending his law license at a California State Bar hearing, he was arrested for pretrial services violations relating to financial transactions that he was engaging in that he should have been notifying pretrial services about. So they remanded him into custody. There, he is charged with basically stealing and defrauding clients of monies that were due to them that he kept for himself. Now, Mr. Avenatti was living large. In fact, his monthly rent was some $50,000 a month. Mr. Avenatti got in over his head and was clearly looking for the big hit to take away all his woes related to this Nike case. And it turned out it wasn't good. It's one of those things that one learns out there is no such thing as quick, easy money. I can tell you, anytime I thought this case was going to be easy, this is going to be easy money, it's turned out to be the biggest pain in the ass ever. Mr. Avenatti probably thought this was going to be the quickest $25 million he ever made, and it turned out to be the biggest pain in the ass ever. So Mr. Avenatti also should have lived by one of the rules of the 12 undeniable truths from a criminal defense attorney, and you can see that below. I keep hyping that because it just seems to keep coming around again and again and again. But Mr. Avenatti, be humble. There's two types of people in the world, those that are humble and those that are about to be. Mr. Avenatti has been humbled. He should have been humble early on and simply told Nike what he wanted and why he was going to do it and informed his client, and he wouldn't be sitting in this situation. But for lack of a better term, as your mother used to say, he got a little too big for his own britches. And that's not good. Never turns out well that way. The next matter on the docket is a crazy case from Ohio. Now, the gentleman that's involved in this is Robert Lindsay Duncan. And you can hear his wife as well as himself on this 911 call at one point. Mr. Duncan became somewhat famous at one particular point in time because he was selling some diet supplements that were promoting weight loss and apparently did okay, and he appeared on the Dr. Oz show and The View over the course of years. But like most of those diet-type pills, the Federal Trade Commission gets involved at some point and saying you're selling things and making claims you can't back up, and people wind up giving the money back. And in this particular case, Mr. Duncan settled for $9 million with the Federal Trade Commission. Well, Mr. Duncan lives in Ohio, lives there with his wife. Well, he has an ex-wife. His ex-wife has remarried. His ex-wife is Cheryl Sanders, and her husband is Robert Sanders. Well, apparently the Duncans had returned home from a trip, and they were out getting the mail. And then apparently a male came rushing up and had some sort of camouflage covering over his head and put a gun to Mr. Duncan's wife. Robert Lindsay Duncan said in two separate gun battles, bullets were flying inches past his wife's head. Her being alive today, I'll never be able to explain that, Robert Lindsay Duncan said. It wasn't one shot or two shots. It seemed like 100 shots. Molly Duncan said she's extremely thankful to be alive. I'm a mother, and I still get to see my kids grow up. The couple thanked the Greene County Sheriff's Office and the Ohio Bureau of Criminal Investigations for their support in the days following the shooting. Robert Lindsay Duncan said law enforcement was exactly right to say that the pair was ambushed in their driveway. What's even more bizarre is that Mr. Duncan's ex-wife, Cheryl Sanders, had driven in a separate car than her husband. So the police believe that it was, in fact, a planned ambush. Duncan is alleged to have fired at Robert Sanders in self-defense and hit him. And around the same time, Cheryl Sanders, his ex-wife, pulled up and pointed a gun at his wife, who is still sitting in the car. That's when Duncan says he then shot and killed his ex-wife, Cheryl Sanders. What makes this even more bizarre is that the Duncans had reached out to the sheriffs about 5 years ago saying that his ex-wife was trying to hire someone to murder him. And if you listen to this 911 tape, which we have, and you can listen to it, you can hear the fear and panic in Molly Duncan's voice, and then Mr. Duncan's when he gets on the phone.
I need someone in my house right now. There's a gunman trying to shoot my husband.
I'm sorry. Tell me your address. What happened?
Someone's shooting at my husband.
Okay. Do you know who they are?
Oh, no.
house when we were pulling in our driveway, and I shot them.
You shot them?
I shot them. They came up to our window, had a gun pointed at my wife's head. The other one got out of the car, went over to the car, and tried to shoot my wife.
Are they struck? Are they down?
Yes, both are down. Both are down.
I want to go home.
No, you have to stay there, Molly. Stay there. You're safe now. They're in this car,
okay,
right,
what's
here.
Your
they're
name?
Safe. My name is Robert Lindsay Duncan. You've got to send ambulance and police now.
They're coming, for sure. Do you know these people?
Yes, it's my husband's ex-wife. He's been trying to kill us for years now.
Okay.
Where are the police at?
So are they still alive? Are they able to move, or what's going on with them?
No, I think the guy is still alive, but the woman is not.
Now, Mr. Duncan had a concealed carry permit, so he was authorized to have the firearm, and he did not commit any laws. And, you know, this is just one of those situations that if he had not had that firearm, he and his wife would probably be dead at this particular point in time. So sometimes, rule of life, you just have to be able to take care of yourself. And you know, the police weren't right there, so you have to be able to do it yourself. Listen to that 911 call and let me know what you think. It sounds like absolute terror. Next on the docket is our dumb criminal contestant of the day. And since it is Valentine's Day, we're trying to keep it with a Valentine's Day theme. With a little warning, people, everyone, ladies, be careful out there dating on apps. You never know who you're going to meet or what you're going to have happen to you, or the situation. Don't get in the car with somebody. Meet in a nice, open, public place, and be careful out there. Our dumb criminal contestant of the week is a 40-year-old man named Christopher Castillo, and he met a young woman in Massachusetts on a dating app. It's not exactly sure which dating app, but they ultimately met. Now, when they first met, Mr. Castillo had to be picked up at his mother's house where he was, in fact, living in Rhode Island. That should have been warning flag number one. Guy living in his mother's basement, 40 years old, probably failing to fly, so to speak. Anyway, the woman picked up Castillo, and they drove up to Massachusetts. As they drove, Mr. Castillo was in the passenger seat drinking wine. Warning flag number two, first date, picking up the guy from his mom's house, and he's drinking while you're driving. Warning signs all over the place. At some point during this date, Mr. Castillo said that he needed to stop at a bank, and she didn't think anything was too suspicious. Perhaps she was thinking that he was going to pay for the date, because apparently he has no apartment and he has no car, so he probably has tons of money since his expenses are rather low. But moments later, Christopher Castillo came sprinting back to her car, sweating profusely and clutching a gun, hat, sunglasses, and $1,000 in cash. He urged the woman to speed away, and their first date quickly turned into a slow-motion disaster as Castillo tangled with police officers and the woman unwittingly found herself becoming a suspected accessory to a bank heist. Now, ultimately, the woman was not charged. She convinced the police that she had no knowledge that she was, in fact, going to be involved in this bank heist. Now, Mr. Castillo was not as fortunate. He was ultimately arrested and has now been sentenced to prison for 5 years. Mr. Castillo also had a lengthy criminal history and had previously been sentenced to 3 years in prison for armed robbery. He also had a misdemeanor jail conviction for assaulting three police officers. So although Mr. Castillo gets our Dumb Criminal Contestant of the Day award, because if you're going to rob a bank, you probably better take somebody that you trust. And you probably shouldn't be drinking prior to that because you're probably not going to be on your game. And apparently, this guy has no game because he's living in his mother's basement, has no car, and no money either. So this also goes out as a warning to everyone. Be careful who you meet on dating online. Look at those warning signs. If they're living in their mom's basement, be afraid. Be very, very afraid. Don't try to change him. Don't think you can fix him. Understand, by the age of 40, he is who he is going to be. And then finally, you may want to spend the few bucks, probably less than 10, to run a criminal background check on the person that you met online. Those simple steps could have been prevented. This young woman would have avoided meeting this individual and being arrested for accessory to bank robbery. And Mr. Castillo may have never robbed this bank if he couldn't have had a ride to the bank. So, Mr. Castillo, he wins our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Now, the question then becomes, who is our dumb criminal contestant winner of the week? Let's do a quick recap of the contestants. Yesterday, we had the female who was charged with battery when her sleeping boyfriend refused her advances. Then we had the mailman who thought it was too hard to actually deliver the mail, so he rented a storage unit to put it all in there anyway. Next, we had the Goldilocks of burglars who like to sample everyone's bed after walking around naked in the woods, thought that this bed was just right, and decided to go to sleep. And obviously, the homeowner was a little surprised to find a naked man in his bed. And then finally, the individuals who had the bag of drugs labeled Big Bag of Drugs, which certainly can raise reasonable suspicion and probably even probable cause when you get stopped on those routine drug stops. And the winner is, yes, today's contestant, Mr. Castillo. Maybe it's just because love is in the air, because it's Valentine's, but that is true love, to take your first date that you meet online, who's willing to drive and pick you up at your mother's house because you have no life, you have no job, you have no car, and you have no money, but she's willing to drive you to your first bank robbery. Yes, Mr. Castillo, you win a Crime Talk mug. All you have to do is contact us at scott@scottreich.com, and we will mail this to you, and we'll send it to you at prison as well. So let us know. Thanks for watching. Have a great day. Have a great Valentine's. May all of your wildest dreams come true. And we'll see you on Crime Talk next time. Have a great day.